Rice. The State of Washington Court of Appeals, Division 1, is now in session. The Honorable Stephen J. Byer presides.
Be seated, everybody. And first up, State versus Huizenga.
Good morning, may it please the court. I'm Mary Swift here on behalf of Terry Huizenga. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. Ms. Huizenga raises two alternative sentencing issues. First, I'd ask this court to accept the state's concession on the same criminal conduct issue. If the court has no questions for me on that issue, then I'll address the Fifth Amendment issue. I've distributed to the panel a statement of additional authorities, which I will file with the court as soon as I get back to the office after argument this morning, going to that Fifth Amendment issue. I've cited in particular two cases addressing the egregious lack of remorse aggravating factor, which is a basis for an exceptional sentence upwards. And what courts have recognized is that aggravator can't be imposed for just simple lack of remorse, which is denial of guilt, failure to accept responsibility, silence, and assertion of defense. And basically what courts have said is that's not really lack of remorse, that's just an assertion of your constitutional right to remain silent, to not incriminate yourself, to stand trial, etc. And so, you know, lack of remorse isn't so much the sort of depravity that is represented by that egregious lack of remorse, but just the exercise of the constitutional right, which can't be penalized. And so can't be a basis to aggravate a sentence. It also can't be a basis to deny a sentencing alternative. And so the other two cases I've cited on there are Grayson and Montgomery, which recognize a trial court can't deny a sentencing alternative on an improper basis. And an improper basis is the lawful exercise of a constitutional right, such as the right against self-incrimination. Montgomery explicitly recognized that denying a sentencing alternative based on the defendant's choice to stand trial is error. In that case, it was a sex offender sentencing alternative, which is under the same provision or same subset of provisions of the SRA, categorized as a sentencing alternative. And here we have the exclusive basis for denying Ms. Huizenga's request for a first-time offender waiver was her refusal to acknowledge responsibility. Any responsibility whatsoever. And on that, I'd point this court to the Garibay case, which I've cited in the statement of additional authorities, and it's quite analogous. The trial court imposed an exceptional sentence based on egregious lack of remorse for, quote, the defendant's refusal to show any remorse whatsoever. And in that case, they said this remorse was just a denial of guilt and an assertion of a defense, which is a protected constitutional right.
Difference between somebody not making any statement and the court saying, you had a chance to allocute here, you didn't say anything that demonstrated remorse, I'm going to tag you for your assertion of your right to remain silent, versus I'm going to allocute, and my allocution is I'm the victim here. I didn't do anything wrong. And the court saying, I just don't buy that. I'm going to go this way in the grid, or I'm going to go within the option or not.
No, I don't believe there is a distinction, and that's where these cases recognize that certainly the right to silence is encompassed in the right against self-incrimination, but so is the denial of guilt or the failure to accept responsibility, because that Fifth Amendment right continues all the way through the direct appeal. And I would point this court to the Ramirez case, which I've cited, and in that case, essentially, he continued to assert his failed defense at sentencing. And that's exactly what Ms. Huizenga is doing here. She asserted self-defense at trial, and she's continuing to assert that self-defense claim, which she has a right to do all the way through the direct appeal. And so there isn't really a distinction between silence or denial of guilt because they're both encompassed by that right against self-incrimination.
So if the court had said, you're not the victim here, you were the perpetrator here, there was overwhelming evidence of your guilt in a given case, that'd be different?
Certainly the trial court can look to the facts of the offense in considering a sentence to impose, but a simple denial of responsibility is too far, and courts do recognize that distinction. And in this case, we don't have the trial court looking to, you know, the facts of the specific incident, but rather her refusal to accept responsibility for what the trial court has said she's been convicted for, which she has, but, you know, refuses to recognize that ongoing right through the appeal.
In your brief, mm-hmm. your second assignment of error is that the trial court violated appellant's Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. Are you altering that assignment of error in any way today?
No. It's still a continuing, yeah, it still encompasses the violation of a right against self-incrimination. As this court probably is familiar with, sometimes an issue doesn't fully crystallize until you have a chance to look at it again. And so I was able to analogize to that egregious lack of remorse aggravator, which I think helps direct sort of the permissible bases to consider a lack of remorse and the impermissible bases to consider a lack of remorse. And so-called remorse, when it's just a denial of guilt, failure to accept responsibility, is not actually remorse, but just an exercise of that Fifth Amendment right, which is what I've assigned error to. I'll reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
May it please the court, Hillary Thomas for the state of Washington. With respect to the first issue, the ineffective assistance of counsel regarding failing to make an argument on the same course of criminal conduct, the state has conceded that issue. And as such, this matter would need to be, if your honors accept the concession, need to be remanded for resentencing, which arguably renders the second issue, the violation of the right to remain silent, Fifth Amendment issue, one that this court does not need to reach. This is an issue that is unlikely to present itself at resentencing. She has already served her time. Counsel and I have spoken about this, and we essentially believe that this is second issue is moot because she has served her time. And but with respect to the Fifth Amendment issue, that is the only constitutional issue that counsel has asserted was violated by the court's consideration.
Let me explore the mootness. The mootness, this would be moot if we knew that on remand the Superior Court would grant the request to treat it as the same criminal conduct and conduct another sentencing proceeding. But we don't know that, do we? We just know that given the assignment of error and the concession, there's going to be another proceeding at which the Superior Court will be asked to do that.
Will be asked to find the same course of criminal conduct.
Yeah.
Yes, correct.
No one would expect us to direct the Superior Court's decision.
Correct.
So we don't know if it's moot because if the Superior Court says no, it's not the same criminal conduct, because of either this thing that neither of you have presented mm-hmm. to us or just mm-hmm. an analysis that no one's gone through, I'm leaving things as they are, mm-hmm. then we are where we are, right? So we're kind of moot, but not quite moot.
Yes, and that's why, Your Honor, I'm saying essentially moot, and I say I don't think Your Honor needs to address it because I think it's unlikely to reassert itself upon resentencing because she has served a standard range time. The court did not impose the high end of the standard range. It did only impose the, you know, middle of the standard range. So, you know, it possibly could go higher. I would be shocked if it did. But
that presupposes
it's not
a resentencing.
So
that presupposes a resentencing. I guess my point is this,
yes.
The Superior Court could say on the legal question, I'm ruling that this is not same criminal conduct.
Yes.
I am not going to conduct a resentencing.
okay. Yes.
I mean, that's a theoretical possibility here, it seems.
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
If I was missing something, I just wanted to know.
Before. No, but if it does find that it's the same course of criminal conduct, the amount
another
of time
one of those days,
that,
so.
That she was facing would be less than the time that she's, I believe, has already served.
Okay.
So. The only constitutional right that has been asserted here is the Fifth Amendment right. And otherwise, the sentencing court imposed a standard range sentence, which she cannot appeal unless the court violated some provision of the SRA in imposing sentence or violated a constitutional right, because otherwise it's a standard range sentence, and she does not have the ability to appeal that. With respect to the Fifth Amendment right that only addresses compelled statements or involuntary statements, and neither of which occurred here at sentencing, the court did not require her to make any kind of statement. She chose to allocute. She chose to not accept any responsibility. Her statement at sentencing was rather rambling and focused on a lot of things, and basically how had she been done wrong in her life. So she didn't really even address the issue of the offense itself. But there was evidence in the record from the trial about how she believed that she was the victim in this whole thing, and that they were to blame for everything happening. So the court can certainly take that into consideration. And so she never invoked her Fifth Amendment right. The sentencing court can't be violating her Fifth Amendment right if she never invoked it. She chose to speak at sentencing. They were voluntary statements at sentencing. So the consideration of her statements, to the extent that they addressed anything with respect to the offense, the court was quite capable of considering and well within its right to do so. With respect to the court can certainly consider in deciding whether to impose a more lenient sentence, just like it does with people who decide to enter a plea of guilty. The court can consider that acceptance of responsibility in deciding to impose a lesser sentence. What the court can't do is, based on a defendant's right to remain silent and choosing to remain silent, it can't impose or increase a sentence or impose an aggravated sentence. So that's the issue with respect to the aggravator, and I think one of the cases, Ramirez or Garibay, that counsel cited. With respect to the evidence that was before the court, it starts with her 911 call in which she goes down. So she goes down and she's essentially injecting herself into the situation. She knows that they're on the boat. They tell her that she's on the boat, or that they're on the boat, and she says, oh, goody. And then she calls 911 and says, she's at my boat. Her ex-husband and his girlfriend are there, and she wants them gone because it's her boat. This is my boat, not hers. I want her fat ass out of here, and I'm sorry I'm so vile, but it's been going on for years, so I'm quite bitter. At this time, I'm trying to get her ass off my boat. And 911's like, this is still verbal, right? And she's like, yeah, they're still down there, and their naked ass is telling me how much they love each other. So she is instigating this whole thing. And then when they go down into the hold, she goes down into the hold where they're in bed together. She starts trying to take pictures, and that's when the things get physical, because the victim here, Rachel, does not want pictures taken of her while she's naked in bed with the ex-husband. And so then the defendant grabs her by the hair and drags her upstairs and essentially pulls her overboard with her and into the cold water, and then continues to try and push her head under the water, and says that she hates her, she wants her to die, and that's where the felony harassment facts come in. But at no point during this entire incident does she show any acceptance of responsibility for what she's done. And in fact, when she talks with the officers afterwards and they say, you know, well, how did you end up in the water? She says, because I had hold of her hair. I just kept hold of her hair. I figured the fat bitch couldn't swim. So she, when they get out of the water, she shows no concern. She continues to rant and rave. In fact, she's making so many disparaging comments that the officer has to make her go up further up the dock because they can't attend to Rachel, who is, I think she had a dislocated elbow, and they obviously had some other concerns about their well-being, given that they were naked in the water at 1 a.m. and so the freezing cold water, and neither one of them had any clothes on. So the court was well within its means to consider the statements that she made to the officers during trial and what happened during the trial, I mean during the incident, and how she was not expressing any kind of acceptance of responsibility and feeling that she was a victim. And I think on the way to the jail, she felt like they were the ones who should be going to jail and not her. And so all that was before the court, and the court indicated that nothing that it heard up until this time and nothing he or she had heard that day had indicated that she was taking any kind of acceptance or responsibility in this matter. And so therefore chose not to impose a more lenient sentence that she was requesting, which is the first-time offender waiver. And if the court doesn't have any other questions.
Thank you.
Just to briefly address the mootness issue, I did, reviewing the record, she was sentenced to 12 months of community custody for the standard range sentence, and a first-time offender waiver allows for a six-month community custody period plus some treatment time. And so I don't know exactly the extent of her community custody at this point, so that would just be a better question for the trial court to address in terms of mootness. Now, in terms of the whether she was compelled to make those statements.
Yes, sure. Is a demonstration of remorse immaterial at sentencing?
I would say that it is, yes.
It's immaterial.
Yes.
So if somebody gets up there and just totally comes apart and cries and talks about how terrible it was and they've never done anything like this before, that's not something a judge should take into consideration.
Right. The judge can take into consideration the facts of the crime and the person's offender history. And those are the bases for determining what sentence is appropriate under those circumstances. And again, I would point this court to Ramirez and Garibay, which I've cited in the Statement of Additional Authorities. Ramirez, I believe, was an allocution at sentencing. That was the basis for the trial court's lack of remorse finding. In that case, he, if I recall correctly, he continued to assert his defense and attempted to shift the blame to the victim at sentencing, which is essentially what we have here. And that the appellate court said was improper punishment for continued denial of his guilt.
Let me pursue what you answered for me earlier. You said the court should take into account the offense and
the
criminal history?
Right, the facts of the crime and the criminal history.
And that's it?
Right. I mean, that's protected by the Fifth Amendment and
so
required by Blakely.
What if the allocution is, I can't wait to get out of jail because I'm going to do it again?
Well, I mean,
that can't be considered either, right?
That would be outside the facts of the particular crime, right? I mean, if you had, now there is an egregious lack of remorse case where the defendant said, you know, I would do this again,
yeah,
given
this
the opportunity.
This isn't an aggravator.
Right, and the jury hasn't found.
Just for considering whether a first-time offender waiver or a mitigated sentence downward. A statement, I can't wait to get out because I'm going to do it again. That would be not something that could properly be considered by the judge.
Right. The SRA allows for the facts of the crime and the individual's criminal history to be considered in imposing a particular sentence. Thank you.
Next up, State.